Blog Talk Radio.
Friends, to your One World Talk Show with your host Greg L. Grizz. That'd be me. Today we are hitting it hard, round two. Did y'all hear me? Round two with a brother who is this gentleman has been through a lot, and he's standing as a hero for all of us. I'm going to introduce our guest momentarily, but I want to go ahead and just break it down and really talk about who he is and where he's coming from. And I'm not going to officially introduce you, guest, but I just want to make sure that you're with us. You with us?
Yes, I am, Brother Greer.
All right. Let me do the honors. I'm going to say that again. Let me do the honors of introducing you. Now, we did a show yesterday, and I'll tell you what, we feel like because it was 300 people who actually really listened to that show. So I said, you know what, we got to do this again. Backed by popular demand, but let me, before I even say his name, I want to do this in a chronological manner, because I'm going to read for you this man's background. I'm going to read for you, and I can tell you this gentleman is a true American hero. On February 5th, 1975, Joseph Chester identified a 17-year-old, who was our guest, who had robbed him 4 months prior. This gentleman was arrested and sentenced to 20 years in prison. I'm going to say that again. He was arrested and sentenced to 20 years in prison for armed robbery. 75, y'all, 1975, 1975, 11 years later, 11 years later, what he did was through due diligence, effort. I mean, he didn't just give up and fold up and stop and you know, which a lot of us, even myself, hey, you know, you got me locked in. I'm, man, won't let me out, yo. I'm telling you, he went to work, y'all. He went to work. And I tell you what, it caused the governor's attention, granted our hero a full pardon. But even while that was going on, the original accuser recanted his testimony after the due diligence and perseverance of our guest made him recant his testimony. Whew. All of this effort Mr. Leslie Zass did, a lot of it with just due diligence and God, many cold nights, 11 years, locked in the penitentiary, got himself out. Man, I can't say it. I can't say how grateful and honored I am to have you on the show, Leslie Zass. So thank you so much for being here again, round two. We welcome you to One World Talks, my brother.
Thank you, bro. I really appreciate the opportunity. Truly.
Hey, you know, we will continue on with our efforts to make sure your story gets told. So let's get into it. I I gave you a brief synopsis. Let's talk about what you want to add to that, because what I didn't say was that you have been working on the front lines to help those who are wrongfully convicted get justice. And you've been doing that consistently. So let's talk about those types of things and some of the things that you're doing to date.
What I've been doing is I've been networking with other organizations and actually meeting individuals who have complained of having been convicted wrongfully and doing investigations on fellow's cases. I have a fellow case that I was even actually given the authorization to even talk about him, a fellow by the name of Dante Bruce, who was sentenced to life. And he's presently has over 24 years served on a life sentence. He's in the Cumberland facility here in Maryland, which is the maximum security facility here now. I was actually able to get him what they call an actual innocence hearing on a petition that I filed that I actually investigated, took the statements from the witnesses and submitted everything to the circuit court. And that's, if anyone is familiar with the actual innocent petition, that's not something that judges usually grant, but they actually granted this petition. So now we're in the process of going back again, because the attorney that was supposed to had represented him did not do what he supposedly did. Simple as that.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow.
But
so tell us about. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I just wanted
to ask you.
I did a blog with Wrongfully Convicted, Actual Innocence, with Brooke Giddings. And I never knew that there was an Innocent Project conference that had been going on that had been held, right? I never knew that. All these years, I've never known that there was another conference that was held where all the exonerees were brought together and all. And when I found out about it, Brooke actually was the one that asked me had I ever been to one, and I told her, what was it? She explained to me what it was. I said, no, I had. They actually helped me be able to go to the Innocent Network Conference in Memphis, Tennessee, on the 50th anniversary of Martin Luther King's assassination, right?
Wow. Amazing. We can go ahead and share some of that information, too, because we're going to attach this sound clip, this MP4, to an article, I'm pretty positive, and that will be made available on the channel as well. I wanted to know, Brother Leslie, I wanted to know about this gentleman, Joseph Chester. Can you tell us a little bit about him and how that whole scenario worked to where he recanted his testimony?
I was in the Maryland House of Corrections, which what they called, the nickname was The Cut, here in Jessup, Maryland. That facility was known for incidents of violence taking off at any time. You had maximum security inmates there. You had people who were considered the scum of the Division of Correction there. That was the place where they threw everybody at, right? And I ended up down there because of me doing what they call a walk away from a program out in the pre-release, right? They didn't classify it as an escape. They said it was a walk away because I walked away. They gave me a broom and told me to sweep from one end of the city block all the way down to the other end of the city block. And they said they looked out there and they saw the broom up against the wall, right? But
wow.
I had always been up. Brother Greer, let me say something. I'd always said that if ever I was had the opportunity to regain my freedom, then I'm going. You understand? Because I have no business being here. You know, I was wrongfully convicted by race, you understand, because a lot of racial issues was involved in my case that was going on here that time in Baltimore, Maryland. And let's face it, a whole lot of individuals who were teenagers were actually swept up in that time when the state's attorney was allowed to do what he was doing to individuals who lived in what they called the urban areas, you know? So that's where we lived at, people of color lived at. And that was how that was at that time. I mean, just, you know, to be facing reality, we have to tell the truth of how things were then. That's how they were. But I did a walk away from there, and when they actually caught me, it was like 6 months later, and they took me back in, and then I was sent down to the Maryland House of Correction. And while I was there, I was playing basketball out in the courtyard, the recreation yard, one evening. And when I got finished playing, I was sitting on the bleachers, and a fellow came over to me and asked me, "Was not a kid that used to live out west?" But this was an older guy, right? Now, at this time, I had established myself inside the institution as being one of the top ball players, and I played for the team that represented the institution. We used to play against the colleges that they used to bring in there, the major universities like, Virginia State University. They would bring them there. We would play them, Cumberland, County College, and all that. We would play them Anne Arundel
County.
So
is that what you did to keep yourself kind of active? Did you do a lot of that? Because 11 years is a long time.
I did basically when I first went in. I wouldn't touch the basketball, man, because I had such a deep attitude and animosity towards what had happened, man, to the point where I was filled with a lot of hatred and towards anything that was white. I didn't care, you know. I just didn't have no respect towards anybody because of what was done and the way it was done, and then the fact that, you know, if something was something, an actual incident happened and the person laughed at me, that was, well, I'll tell you, it was the attorney that represented me. I filed a claim against him at the Attorney Grievance Commission and ended up, this man was a bar council member of the Attorney Grievance Commission, meaning he was one of the people who sat on the board to determine when another attorney has did something that was not supposed to have been done. And, you know, I was like, you know, how can this man sit here and make a decision when I'm filing a complaint against him for what he did? And then he came up to the side of me, and the officers had me handcuffed and was getting ready to transport me back to the facility that I was housed at. And he said to me, he actually said to me, "Nigga, you're going to serve that whole 20 years like that, you know?" Like, it was nothing, man. I had never seen this man a day in my life until my mother introduced
me. Now, who was this? I'm sorry, who was this again? Who was this?
He was the attorney that represented. My mother paid an attorney named Robert Conrad to represent me on the armed robbery charge. And he actually, he verified that he actually worked with the state's attorney to actually have me convicted wrongfully. He actually said to me, "Nigga, you're going to serve that whole 20 years." You know, and I said, "Yeah, well, guess what? I don't have life." Well, you know, I mean, that's where my attitude and defiance came towards attorneys, because I never trusted them. And then after becoming a paralegal, I started seeing things that other attorneys were doing in regards to people's cases, like making deals with the state's attorney to use one case for another case down the line and all that kind of stuff, man. And you know, I'm saying these things from somebody who worked with the public defender's office and used to go back there with the state's attorney and the judges and listen to these cases and the comments that they're making in regards to people cases. And I know they said you're not supposed to talk about those things because they were during the times that you were employed there, but I am no longer employed there with any agency associated with the criminal justice system. So, you know, it's just, you know, that I still feel that things should be really done in regards to the judicial system so that people can get a fair chance and a fair opportunity when they go into these courts, you know, instead of it being a one-sided situation where it's always, you know, you have to prove your innocence because you're already condemned to being guilty.
Let me pause you right there. So listen, if you're listening in on our stream, it's a 30-minute segment. We got 12 minutes left, so if you want to call in, now is the opportunity to call in. America, 213-943-3684, One World Talks. We are doing a show on miscarriages of justice with a true American hero, Mr. Leslie Vass. Wrongfully incarcerated for over 10 years, 11 years to be exact, and he had the perseverance and the audacity to stand against the system and let itself out. So, again, if you want to call in, 213-943-3684. So I tell you what, let me get some statistics because we want to break it down for the people in the United States. Now, one of the things that is, I think is pertinent to know, Leslie, is there are 2.2 million people in the nation's prisons and jails. That's a 500% increase over the last 40 years. 500%,
yeah.
Leslie, over the last 40
yeah.
years. So we would think that law is getting better as society is more sophisticated and intelligent, but it seems to be the other way around. Why do you think that
yeah,
phenomenon
and out of
is?
All those people that they accounted, just imagine how many have been wrongfully in prison. Look at the National Registry. You understand that they have of wrongfully convicted people from up there in Northwestern University, part of that organization, that university, of the status that they have. I think at the last time that I looked at it, it was over 2,200 people who had been wrongfully convicted.
Wow.
That's
wow.
not
hey,
counting
you know
the individual.
Let's go ahead and take that caller. We got a caller coming in. But you finish that thought while we bring the caller online. You said that's not counting
okay.
the individuals. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's not counting the individuals who actually have been that hasn't been exonerated. The ones that have been forced to accept plea deals in exchange for their freedom because they got tired of being in prison wrongfully, and the state made
wow.
deals with in exchange for, you know, not filing a civil claim, because that's what it's all about. Immediately, as soon as they find
wow.
out that somebody's wrongfully in prison, that's what the first thing they throw up at them, you know.
Wow.
No contempt
wow.
or, what is that, an alpha plea, you know, in exchange
oh, wow.
for your graduate time served and release you with nothing. And that way you can't come back and approach them for any kind of compensation to be able to help yourself. So you have people who've also accepted these deals who actually have been innocent, but they got tired and they felt they was fighting a no-win situation. We have a fellow now
wow.
down in North Carolina that's been fighting for over 40 years, a fellow by the name of Ronnie Long. And
I'll tell you what, let's pause right there because we want to talk about Ronnie Long and some current cases. But we're going to go ahead and take this caller right now. Let's bring her in, him in. Caller, you're on the line with One World Talks with Leslie Vass. Are you there, caller? Caller, okay, I guess that call dropped. Okay, so you wanted to talk about Leslie Vass case. caller.
Oh, Friday Law.
All right. Go. No. I'm waiting. I thought we got the caller back, but I guess they're having technical difficulties. So go ahead and let's talk about the current people who have been incarcerated, who have been mass incarcerated in some seriously critical cases right now.
The first case come to mind besides this kid that I'm with, the young fellas that I'm working with, is a fellow from North Carolina, a guy named Ronnie Long. Man, I've been following Ronnie's case for a long time, since I come home in 1984. You understand? You know, after that, when his case became known, came publicized, because originally they wasn't allowed, they wasn't talking about wrongful imprisonment cases, you know, when I came home. All they talked about was, you know, the fact that somebody had committed a crime and, you know, they had been convicted and all that. It was never a thing they talked about the people who had been, the miscarriage of justice that's been completed against people. So Ronnie Long has been fighting and fighting and fighting and proving that he's actually not the person who committed the crime. DNA evidence has supported his accusations that he was not one of the individuals who've been involved in it. And still, the people in North Carolina refuse to acknowledge that and release this brother. What are they waiting on? That's what I'm trying to understand. You know, and it hurts.
I'll tell you
what.
Yes, you know, let's do this. And I'm going to say this to you. I'm going to chime in. We have both had a commonality. We have a project called the Guilty and Innocence Project, which is pretty much an intake. It is an intake group with which largely is social media, but we take in cases. And a lot of people call about cases that they feel like, whereas they've been wrongfully convicted. Well, Ronnie Long's case was one of the cases that came through that, and we've been watching that case for about 3 years. So we hope to get justice in Ronnie's case, and we're going to highlight his case as well. We do have a caller on. We're going to bring the caller in. Let's bring her. Hold on 1 second. We're bringing the caller in. Caller, you're on the air with One World Talks for special guest Leslie Vass.
Hello?
Caller?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes. Caller, go ahead. You're
Hi.
Coming in loud and clear.
Hi. I was listening to the show, and this is for Leslie. I was just wondering, was you mentally prepared to come out, or did they give you any counseling in jail? Are you
encountering
them?
No, in all honesty, I'm glad you said you asked that question, because that's one of the main things that I've always stressed, right? Being Maryland's first exoneree, one of the things that I learned when I first came out here was that I needed help. I needed help mm-hmm. to deal with what I had been going through while I was incarcerated. And you know, to bring that kind of attitude and anger out here in the streets was not good, you know. And I actually, when I went to the governor and them for the compensation, I actually asked them to put in there that I needed the opportunity to get counseling, personal counseling and group counseling and family counseling, because these were things that I felt I dearly needed because of the things that I had seen going on while I was inside the prison system and the things that I was seeing that had changed out in society came home. You understand? I wanted to be a better person, you know, but I also want people to understand what I had actually went through and the devastation of what it actually did.
Mm-hmm.
Caller, thank you for calling in, and we appreciate you calling in. Where are you calling from, caller?
I'm calling from Chicago.
Oh, wonderful. Chi-town, the Windy City. That's mm-hmm. exactly where we're at. So listen, thank you, and thank you for supporting. And then we're going to have Leslie's show on an article that's going to be made on the site. So thank you for calling in. We appreciate it. So Leslie, let's talk about that, you know, and we've talked about that many days, about the psychological effects of people who have been wrongly incarcerated. Why, I can tell you just from, you know, the long years that I've known you, and I tell you, you know, you are mentally more capable than most people who haven't gone through such a horrendous piece. You know, and I know you said counseling, but I mean, are there any other things that really have helped you out through this process?
Yeah, it is. My faith, man. You know, quite nasty. You know, that's the only thing that I had to lean on, you know? Faith and belief that, you know, God was going to see me through this and protect me while I'm in there, you know, doing the things, doing times that I was there and seeing the things that I was seeing. I was seeing correctional officers, man, who were, I guess if they were upset with their wife or girlfriend or something, when they came in, they took it out on the inmates, you know? I mean, you know, a lot of things that I've seen that was never published in the papers and stuff, or never was published correctly in the papers, you know, are things that, you know, are very horrendous. You know, somebody playing psychological games with you, they turn all the lights out on the tier and hit the door and tell you to step out. And if somebody stupid enough to step out the cell, then the officers, a couple officers jump on them and beat them with the billy clubs and stuff, you know. And then when they turn the lights back,
You can be the hero. We got about 2 minutes, so you can be the hero for a lot of people. And one of the things that I want to do is, you know, within the last 2 minutes, is if someone wanted to reach out to you, maybe if there was a miscarriage of justice and they wanted to get a hold of you, how do they get a hold of you?
Best way to reach me is through my email, which is leslie.vass@hotmail.com. Well, they can reach me at 443-495-2944.
So here's what we want America to know. You know, Leslie is an American hero, Mr. Leslie Vass. He's been our guest for the last 30 minutes. And, you know, one of the things that is very important to understand, but a lot of people who are locked in the penitentiaries of America and the world, a lot of innocent folks sitting up in those prisons. And the only way that it can be alleviated is if we continue to band together, tell our stories, and make sure that, you know, one of the things is we got to learn the laws of the land. And that's what Leslie did. So he's a shining example for us all. Hey, listen, brother, I appreciate you. We're going to share your story. You're always welcome to come back on the show. And we're going to make sure that, again, that this particular segment goes out around the country, and we'll also ask for feedback. So God bless you and everything that you're doing, and thank you for who you are, and thank you for continuously standing for justice. We are honored to have you on World World Talks, and I'm honored to be your personal friend on top of that, so thank you.
Alright,
so God bless you, and we will be talking soon.
Okay, you know it, bro. Take care. Bye-bye.
Alright, thanks now.
Around the way, tell them, calm down.